Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Brother 22 Roundtable Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and we are here today to talk about the legacy of the all-star players in Big Brother 22 and discuss the week so far, as we have some interesting things to talk about this week. Joining me today is Phil. How you doing, Phil?
Yo, what's going on, Taryn? I'm doing great. I'm honestly ecstatic right now that we, like, I know we were talking about before about how the triple eviction was going to ruin, you know, the gameplay that we wanted to see over the course of a long week, but I'm just glad we kind of got through that. It's like in Survivor, like Redemption Island, when they just get through the pogonging real quick in like one tribal council, just get through it. And now we're on to exciting gameplay, which is awesome. It's great to talk to you.
Yes. Also with me tonight is Maggie. How you doing, Maggie?
Hi, guys. I'm really good. I'm like Phil. I'm super excited to talk about what's been going on and can't wait to get into it and talk about all these players because got a lot to say.
Yes. All right. Well, we are here to talk, as I said, about the legacy of these players. We'll talk about the legacy watch at the end of this podcast. And of course, we'll also get into what's been happening this week as we get into this. So far. This week, we have seen that that Cody has again won the HOH. Another HOH, his third HOH, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I think this is the perfect HOH to win it because, you know, he has the final six HOH. And then if he's able to pull off the final four HOH, he's good for the home stretch. So I feel like this is the perfect time for like a power player to win the HOH. And I feel like he might just continue just dominating the season.
He really might. He decided that Christmas was going to be his target. He put up Tyler and Christmas. Tyler as theoretically the pawn here, but nobody really knows, or not nobody. Christmas, Memphis, and Tyler don't really know this for sure, that Tyler is only a pawn at this point. And heading into the veto, they were very concerned that Memphis might win. He might use the veto on Christmas. There were potentially some scenarios where, like, what if he does that and he forces Nicole on the block and they evict Nicole? Or, you know, what if Christmas wins and then he has to put somebody else up? But none of those things happened because Cody also won the veto, Maggie.
I mean, yeah, it's Groundhog's Day over here. Cody just winning everything. And, you know, it stinks because we went through the triple so fast. It feels like Cody just won an HOH and a veto last week, which he did. And there were 2 weeks of gameplay in between. But to us who are sitting at home watching the feeds and sort of waiting for something to happen, Cody's won basically like four competitions in a row that we've had to sit with and sit through. So that's something that he's doing, and it's good for him. I'm happy for him, you know, Phil.
Wishing the best for him. Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah. But it's also like, I feel like it's great that everyone is still kind of guessing on like what, you know, Cody and Enzo's master plan is, which is great because they all kind of want to crawl back into Cody's good graces, you know? And so, you know, they're all just being like, yo, so who's going to go up? You know, Tyler's freaking up freaking out that he might get voted out this week, even though, you know, who knows what's going to happen. It looks like he's not going to be the target. But, you know, so now he's trying to, you know, crawl back into the good graces and make sure, you know, he's set up. He's secure for the next remaining weeks.
Yeah. And this is part of the thing, too, with this triple eviction is that and this sometimes does happen with double eviction. But it really is like last week, Cody won HOH and Vito. And then this week, Cody won HOH and Vito. And it really does just feel like, it's 2 weeks of this. Now, that said, this week is, in my opinion, a lot more interesting than last week, where it was very cut and dry. And because there was a triple looming, like there wasn't really anything to do, you know, like even the talk about like what might we do in the future had to kind of be tempered by this idea of like, I don't really know how it's going to work. Three people might leave, I guess, but how is that going to, like, what's going to happen? Who's going to be put up on the blocks? So on and so forth. And it was definitely for me the slowest week of the season. This week, a little more interesting. We have some intrigue. We have some betrayals happening. Some fun things to look forward to, I think.
We have Nervous Tyler for the first time ever. It's so fun. I can't wait to see what he does. Cause like, you know, I said on Wednesday on the update, I love Tyler so much and I'm really hoping that he can keep his cool and pull some good stuff off here. Cause I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, it's interesting here for Tyler. So as I said, Cody won this veto. The feeds came back just, like an hour ago. And with Cody having the veto, Tyler really feels like it's done. He really feels like it's over for him, that he spent a good like 15 minutes just in the photo room, just, you know, commiserating.
It's all like just coming together now because, you know, we've been talking about for the last like 4 weeks that Tyler has not been doing, maybe even the whole season, that Tyler has not been doing enough to really set himself up for the end of the game. And so now we're at the point where, you know, Tyler is now, it's all coming to him at this one point. And it makes sense that Tyler thinks that he's going home, I feel like, because he is like just a threatening player, like just like in his legacy. I know we're going to talk about the legacy later, but I feel like it makes total sense that he's going home or that he thinks he's going home. But, you know, we know that, you know, Cody has other plans in mind.
Yeah. And so the reason why, and I got into this morning on the update, but it's worth repeating because I think a lot of people haven't quite like followed the logic. And a lot of people, when they saw that Cody won this veto, were like, oh, that's it. Tyler's done. Which could be the case, but it's definitely not necessarily the case. So the logic here for Cody, Enzo, and Nicole, it actually benefits all three of them to do this. For keeping Tyler over Christmas is that Christmas is too tight with Memphis. That if Christmas stays in the game, Tyler leaves, heading into the final five, Christmas will never put Memphis on the block. Memphis might put Christmas up, but might not put Christmas up, probably wouldn't put Christmas up if he had his choice. And that means that two of Cody, Enzo, and Nicole will be on the block in both of a Memphis and a Christmas HOH. That's not good. And then if somebody wins the veto, the replacement comes into play, the third one of them probably ends up on the block and they won't be able to have the votes or the numbers in any way to keep each other safe. Whereas if they keep Tyler in the game and they get rid of Christmas, then ideally you have Memphis targeting Tyler, putting Tyler on the block, maybe next to Nicole, and they just send Tyler out. Or Tyler targeting Memphis, putting Memphis on the block and maybe Nicole, and they send Memphis out. They get to keep each other safe that way. Worst case scenario, Tyler feels burned by Cody. Even if Memphis feels burned by Cody, they try to go after Cody. They put Cody on the block next to Nicole or something like that. Maybe they put Cody on the block next to either Tyler or Memphis. But even if they do Tyler and Nicole, they probably won't put up Cody and Memphis, or too many names. They probably won't put up Cody and Enzo. Tyler will not put Enzo on the block. That is the key. That if Tyler does not feel burned by Enzo, he will put Memphis on the block next to Nicole or Cody, either in the first set of nominations or at the very least as a replacement nominee. And then they have options. They have they're probably going to survive the week, because if they have, you know, say Enzo and Memphis voting to keep Cody over Nicole and then Cody stays. Or if Memphis goes on the block, then it's, you know, Enzo and Nicole voting to keep Cody over Memphis. Whereas if, you know, if Christmas was HOH, she would put Enzo up as the replacement, and now Cody might go home. So it actually makes a lot of sense for them to keep Tyler in the game, even though from like, you know, just looking at the two players, you'd think obviously Tyler needs to go. And that's what Tyler is thinking. And the reason Tyler doesn't see it is because he never found out about the Wise Guys. He doesn't know that Christmas has this connection to Memphis. And so he can't see the logic. And so he just thinks he's done.
I also just think that the end game now, like more than ever, is like, or it's always super, super just about who can pull off the competitions, because the competitions, if you win the competitions, you have the power. And although, you know, Tyler is somewhat of a comp beast, Christmas is killing it. If Christmas could definitely just pull it out and keep winning these competitions, and that means Memphis is good. I feel like right now, especially for Cody, like, his strategy is to make sure that, you know, Memphis does not have any other options. He wants Memphis to not have anyone else to turn to. And right now, you know, he has Christmas. So they need to take Christmas out this week. Otherwise, especially for Cody, because otherwise, you know, Memphis is going to have options. Memphis is going to find other ways to, you know, weasel his way out around the game and maybe even make it to the final two.
Yeah, Phil, to me, Christmas is actually like a non-entity. It's much more about who is more dangerous between Memphis and Tyler, because Memphis, every question comp they've had that Memphis has played in, he's won. So I would be thinking, you know, we're nearing the end stretch, and they used to, you know, we know in recent years that they've been doing much more physical competitions towards the end stretches, but they used to always have mental comps in that unstretch. And Christmas can't really, like, I don't think Christmas is as big of a threat in a mental comp. Like, the one that she won this year was because Devon lost. But Memphis, like, having someone for Memphis to aim his gun at, that who is not Nicole, is the key, I think, from where they're sitting. That would be at least for me.
Yeah, exactly. From a perspective of looking at the pieces and where they lie, it just makes a lot more sense to keep Tyler. Now, with that in mind, there are some complications here. First is that Nicole prefers Christmas, even though Christmas is dead to her. She still kind of prefers Christmas. She has a relationship with Christmas more so than with Tyler. She understands the logic, and she agrees with the logic that it's actually safer for her in particular. She's at the most risk if Tyler leaves, that she is the most expendable one at that point, especially because of how the Wise Guys work. She's literally on the outside of a four-person thing at that point. But she still kind of has this idea that, like, I still wouldn't mind seeing Tyler leave. That's one complication. Another complication is that Enzo has always been a wild card. Enzo has so far wanted Tyler to stay, but there was a conversation between Tyler and Enzo before the veto happened where Tyler finally admitted everything. The committee, he outed it to Enzo. He talked about that. He talked about in the triple, people wanted me to go after you because you were on the outside of the committee. And he was very anti-Cody in the conversation. And Enzo was just about to rat that out to Cody just before this podcast started. And then Tyler interrupted the conversation. Who knows where it could have gone? Now, this could be like an emotional catalyst for Cody that, like, oh, how dare he? But it doesn't really change the logic that he's used so far. So I'm not sure it would actually change his mind. You know, maybe in the short term, I'm not sure. But even if he thinks that Tyler is gunning straight for him, it still makes more sense to keep Tyler, because at the very least, Memphis would be the replacement because he trusts Enzo. And on top of that, if his word stays true and Nicole does vote to keep Tyler and Enzo does vote to keep Tyler, then Tyler probably doesn't go shoot at Cody at that point. He's like, oh, he stuck to his word. He kept me. So now I will go after Memphis or something along those lines. Still, either way, the logic stands. So this shouldn't be too much of a complication, but it's still a complication. And then third, last one is Memphis. Memphis really wants to keep Christmas, and he is not going. I don't think he's going to take it lying down that Enzo wants to vote Christmas out, and that could be difficult. And Memphis could raise a fuss and start making it seem like it's too much trouble than it's worth to keep Tyler around.
But also, I feel like, what would that even do, though? Like, if Memphis is, like, if Memphis is really trying aggressively to, you know, really keep Christmas, why do they have to listen to him? Just in case if he wins an HOH? But even then, like, if they take out Christmas, he doesn't have that many options to begin with. And I know, you know, he's going to be more loyal to the commission than anything. I don't know. I feel like, do you know, like, Maggie, do you have, or have a reason why?
It's so hard because, like, I completely get where Nicole is coming from when she's having the emotional, like, why would I vote to keep Tyler here when I have a better relationship with Christmas than Tyler? Tyler is just obviously a better player, a bigger jury threat. Like, I would be going through the same, like, sort of, I would be really weighing my options. And I think that if I was in their situation, even though the logic, like, Taryn has logicked this out for all of us, I still think I would be like, Tyler has to go. Because I would find Tyler to be, like, infinitely more threatening to my game just by who he is, by the type of player that he is, the way he can pull out a comp at the last second, the fact that he voted to evict me, led a vote that almost evicted me. I would be like, I don't care. I understand the logic. If this one specific thing happens, I need this guy out. So I you know, it's a razor's edge this week. Like Cody said, you said on the update, Cody said that it was 55-45. Like, I get it. And if they decide to go the other way, I would totally understand, because I think I would personally.
I also think, though, like, when you think about, like, the perspective from Nicole of, like, who she can beat, I personally think that she could beat both of them. I think she could beat Tyler because Tyler, again, tried to quit early on. And I think he's played much more of a weaker game. And I think everyone kind of views Christmas as just a follower who's kind of just followed whatever her alliance said. So I feel like Nicole could beat both of them. So it comes down for me to loyalty. And so for then, it makes total sense that I feel like, you know, Tyler is not going to be as loyal, I think, to Nicole as much as, you know, Christmas would be to Nicole. So, you know, change her options, change her perspective, but she'll probably just end up listening to whatever Cody says. So,
yeah, it's interesting for Nicole because it's a little bit, it reminds me a little bit of Nicole Anthony's predicament in last season where, you know, she had the option to keep Tommy or keep Holly. And in a way, keeping Holly is a little bit worse because of, like, the positioning. But at the same time, Holly was probably the only person that Nicole Anthony could beat in the final two. She couldn't beat Jackson. She couldn't beat Cliff, and she couldn't beat Tommy. So you kind of at some point have to keep the person that you can beat in the final two around. And that could be something that she starts to think about. Now, the problem is she can't really make that case to anybody else. She can't, like, say to Cody, well, look, she's the only person I can beat in the end. I can beat her a lot easier than I can beat Tyler in the final two. So I want to keep her around. He's going to be like, you're supposed to be sitting next to me in the final two, Nicole. What are you saying? That's a hard argument to make. And also, I don't think it's how Nicole thinks. In season 18, Nicole was set on going to the final two with Corey, even though she probably would have lost against him, or at least it would have been a lot closer, or not a lot closer. It couldn't have been a lot closer.
Ooh, that would have been a dark timeline.
But Corey definitely had odds to win over her in the final two, but she didn't mind. And she told me that after the season. I fully believe that she is planning to go to the end with Cody. She's not planning to go to the end with anybody else. And so I don't think that's something that's really on her mind. Who do I have better odds of beating? I think she is thinking much more in terms of, how do I make sure I'm I'm not out at 5. And Christmas is probably the person that takes Nicole out at 5. And so it does make a lot more sense for her to keep Tyler around in that instance.
Well, then what about like Nicole's relationship with Ian? Do you think that was more just about, you know, her making sure that she can't be the only winner in the house? Because for me, I felt like it was in Nicole's head that, you know, the only way the people, I guess early on, she was thinking that the only way the people would vote for a winner is if another winner was with her. But
I think that was just her line that she sold Ian right. to keep him close personally.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, that makes sense.
No, I mean, it's a valid point.
I'm not sure, Phil. We'll talk about it when we get to the legacy watch, but I'm not sure. I think Christmas is definitely drawing dead. I'm not certain about Tyler, and we can talk about that when we get to him, just because of some of the exit interviews that I listened to and read by some of the ways that people were talking about him. And I think that if Tyler is at in the final two, it'll be because he won a bunch of competitions to get there, which I think could change things.
I think the only way Tyler makes it is if he wins at 5, 4, and 3. I don't, every single instance, I think he goes out if he doesn't win.
I think that's the only way Tyler, also, I think that's the only way he can win, not only because, you know, he needs to win those, but in terms of just his story and like what he needs for like a final speech, because again, he was drawing dead earlier on. So if he's able to say, yo, you know what? I proved myself in the end. I needed to win those comps and I did it because I actually care about this game. I love this game. I've wanted to win this game for, you know, the last 2 years of my life. Like I'm here in the final two once again, like give it to me. Don't palm me. So I feel like that would be his only way. And also just with the Nicole thing, I also think that like Nicole could beat Cody in the end. I feel like there is a possibility that Kevin's, you know, Kevin's interview with Rob and, you know, listening to like whatever, everything else that Kevin and other jurors have been saying, you know, the jury might actually be bitter against Cody. So it might be not a horrible spot for Nicole versus Cody in the final two, if you ask me. I feel like she might be able to pull it out. It would be a close one, but she could pull it out.
I agree. I think she has a chance. I mean, I've been saying this for a while. I feel like this jury could go in any direction. I think even Christmas could still win this jury, especially since she probably would need to win a few competitions to make it to the end as well. So I really feel like we could be looking at anything. I'm looking at Twitter right now, and Cody is telling Nicole that Tyler told Enzo about the committee. And he's playing it off like, oh, now Enzo knows. He just found out, right? Because Enzo's known for a while. He never told Nicole that he told Enzo. And so now this is a great excuse to now Enzo knows. And she was like, oh my God, what did he say? He was like, he didn't care. He didn't care. It doesn't matter. But
I handled it.
It sounds like
4 weeks ago.
Right now, Cody says keeping Tyler puts that target here for Memphis. But who knows what he's going to say to possibly change that. He could possibly team up with Memphis, says Nicole. So they're having this conversation. And that is the risk, that Tyler and Memphis could theoretically team up. And then you have the same problem that you have with Christmas and Memphis. I personally don't think that will happen, but it's probably something that it's certainly something that they're thinking about right now. So we'll see.
I don't see it happening either, but also Tyler is so good that anything can happen. You know, like that's the reason why if I was Nicole, I would be worried, because you don't keep someone who's that skilled in the game because they can pull crazy stuff off. We all watched 20 and we all watched 19, and we know that what Tyler did in the end game, and we know what Christmas did in the end game. So it's really weighing your options. And I don't think that she's wrong to be trying to push against what Cody wants in this situation.
Yeah, they're having the conversation right now. They could be deciding it right now. So,
oh boy.
We'll have to see where this goes. But yeah, I mean, Nicole is saying that she feels like she'd rather get rid of Tyler. She can't stand him. Doesn't like him.
That's the problem with Nicole, right? That's the problem with her. Just say that he's better. Don't say you don't like him. Like, anyways.
He's just, he's too fake. He's such a liar. He's so underhanded.
Yeah, but I mean, that isn't that. I feel like that's always kind of been the thing. Nicole should just be. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, we can't start talking about Nicole because if she wants to talk about liars and people being underhanded, we should talk to Ian or Danny. But yeah. Anyways.
Well, apparently Tyler timed out in this veto competition that he did very poorly, which is, I think, probably a little bit to his favor here, that he didn't do very well. But he still has, what, 3-4 comp wins to his name at this point. So it's still something that you've got to watch out for moving forward. And if what Cody is saying is that, like, if it's coming down to just we need to win anyway, then I'd probably rather compete against Christmas than Tyler.
I don't know if I totally agree, though. I feel like once if Christmas gets a fire under her, we've seen it before. I feel like especially like just with this season, like Christmas has won HOHs. She has won vetoes. She is a comp beast. I don't know. I feel like people always do underestimate. I know like last season, Christmas broke her leg, so she didn't have the same. She wasn't able to have the comp prowess. But, you know, this year, I really think that if you lead Christmas in this game, she can ignite a fire under her and she could really just start dominating some competitions. And again, juries always look at comps now, especially in the new game. Like comps near the end matter a lot. So I don't know. I feel like it is the right move to take out Christmas this week over Tyler. And I also, like you were saying, like, this might actually end up being a good thing for Tyler. Like, I'm not going to say he threw it or anything like that, but, you know, like, maybe it's going to work in his favor.
Last thing Cody just said, first thing went through my head is, did he throw that to make himself seem so weak?
Which would not be good for his jury chances, but, you know.
No, and Tyler wouldn't do that. He's not Dan. Tyler likes Dan. Yeah.
Not even Dan would throw a final six veto, I think. When he's on the block,
that's like 4D chess. That's like, you know, that's like thinking that Tony threw game changers to win Winners at War. Like, he's thinking 18 million steps ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, I personally, I agree. I think the right call is to evict Christmas. I really do. I think that you're giving too much power to Memphis by keeping Christmas in, and you're putting yourself at more risk than you need. And Cody has been prone to do this throughout the season, is that he will occasionally make a decision in his head where he'll say, all right, I'm just going to put Danny on the block right now then. And then he'll be like, hold on. That's not the smart thing. So I feel like if they do decide they're going to evict Tyler right now, then they may go back and change their mind again. It's definitely possible. Cause I do think, like I said, I do think it's the right move for Cody to evict Christmas, but it's not the right move by that much of a margin. And there may be a part of Cody that's just like, I talked about this as well, that he is consistently not underestimated Tyler. He's always trying to make sure that he's seeing the best possible thing that Tyler could be doing in this moment and going like, he could be doing this. And that's why he's like, did he throw that? He's not taking anything for granted with Tyler. And he may just feel like, I'm just going to get rid of him now. I just can't risk him going to Memphis and sinking them. Because that's the thing too, where, and this is a good point that I just thought of, that Tyler has more ammo than Christmas does to flip Memphis, where, like, if they keep Christmas and they evict Tyler, Christmas has nothing on Enzo and Cody and them, nothing. She can't flip Memphis against Cody at all. You know, there's nothing that she can do there. They know where those pieces fall. They know that Christmas is with Memphis. And hey, maybe Christmas is fourth on the totem pole. It's honestly pretty likely with Memphis. Whereas Tyler, if he stays, Memphis is already like, whoa, you just voted out Christmas. I don't like that. And Tyler can out all of what was happening, the slick six, triple threat, like all of the stuff that's been going on. Like, hey, you may think that you're with Enzo and Cody, but they are a pair working together, and they have been in so many other alliances that have not included you. And that could flip Memphis to work with Tyler, and Memphis and Tyler are a more dangerous duo than Christmas and Memphis. So there is even more logic in that direction. And it's starting to feel to me like one of those, I could take either one a little bit.
My thing, though, about Memphis getting flipped, Memphis doesn't like to be wrong. So I feel like if Tyler came to him and gave him all of that information, Memphis is the type of guy who would sit there and be like, oh, yeah, wow, that's, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And then he'd sit on it for a second and be like, none of that matters because everybody's here. You know, like we figured it out. They're with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like the other thing with that is just that, like, that means that Memphis would have to go to the end with Tyler, which I don't know if that is like the correct move for Memphis to go, because I also just think that Memphis would not want to go to the end with Tyler. He wants, again, like you were saying, like once he has something set in his head, that's it. That's just the way his game is going to go, and no one can change that. So it's right now set in his head that I don't want to go to the end with Tyler. Tyler is somewhat of a threat to me. So I don't know. I feel like he would just continue to stick with the commission.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think there's just always that threat. Cody and Nicole talking right now. It sounds like Cody is saying basically, if Memphis is okay with Christmas leaving, then I think I'm just going to go with that. But if he pushes back too hard, then we may just go with Tyler. So it's still a little bit up in the air. I do believe that Memphis will push back. He also has to make sure that Memphis is willing to put Christmas on the block next week, which is, you know, something that I think he would be willing to do. So I think both of those things lean toward evicting Tyler. Now we'd have to see what Enzo has to say about it. I think Enzo, not much of a pusher, probably will accept it, even though this is actually not great for Enzo, I believe. So we'll just have to see. I mean, it's interesting. This is what I meant when I said that there was interesting things possibly happening this week.
Oh my gosh. I love the idea that we could get a week full of us not knowing what's going to happen up until eviction day. That's exciting. Some type of intrigue, you know,
literally anyone, any single person could win the season. Any single person can be in the final two. I see Enzo making it far. I see Enzo. He's in a great spot right now. And I think you could continue to just do well. But, you know, I don't see him progressing past that.
Yeah. And really, I have to say, if Tyler gets sent home this week, he did it to himself. I really feel like this telling Enzo about the committee thing, really feeling, and I can understand, again, I can understand why he thought he was a goner here, but he really threw himself in front of this train by outing that information to Enzo, which now has Cody thinking about what other information does he have on me that he can use with Memphis to flip Memphis against me. And that is not great. So this is, you know, this is big for Memphis, actually. I feel like Memphis, his chances of winning, I think, may have just gone up significantly.
I mean, what is Memphis's path to you? Like, Memphis wins final five HOH, let's say. And this is when, let's say they keep Tyler, right? They keep Tyler in the house and they evict Christmas this week. And Memphis is pissed that they evicted Christmas because, you know, he didn't want that. Who does Memphis put up? Memphis without Christmas, I don't think I see a full path for him. But that could just be me.
What I'm saying. If Christmas just is now staying, if they are flipping this vote and keeping Christmas, then Memphis is in a great spot because Christmas is still a target ahead of him from the Nicole, Cody, Enzo side, and he has backup with Christmas. If it's, he basically has a 2-4 shot at being lock safe in the final five, that him or Christmas winning an HOH, he's safe. He then has a chance of veto. him or Christmas winning the veto. If one of them is off the block, they would probably, she would probably use it on him. If she was able to. So he's pretty safe next week. If Christmas stays, then he's going into the final four. If he does manage, him or Christmas manage to win, that means they probably take out Nicole. Maybe Nicole wins a veto and Enzo or Cody leave because they kept Christmas in the game. And now all of a sudden he's in final four with Christmas, who's loyal to death to him. And maybe Enzo, maybe Cody and Nicole, maybe it's 2-on-2. Like, his odds are fantastic moving forward if Christmas stays, which is talking me back into, they should probably evict Christmas.
And that's why I said it's a matter of, who are you more afraid of, Memphis or Tyler? You know?
Yeah, because that's the thing. Even if Tyler flips Memphis back around, it's that Tyler is loyal to Enzo. And that is the weakness in Tyler. That if Tyler stays, it's because Enzo kept him. And if Christmas is there, she will always be more loyal to Memphis than anybody else. Whereas if Tyler stays, he might pull in Memphis, but he will also be with Enzo, and his loyalty will be to Enzo first. And that is what will keep Cody safe, because Cody will not end up on the block next to Enzo. And that's just what the logic comes down to. And I feel like I just went through that same emotional reaction that Cody is going through right now. And I'm wondering if Cody will come back around to the logic that I just came back around to. We'll have to wait and see. My guess is going to be no, because the problem is that he has other people that he needs to convince. And once you let loose the option to do this other thing, it's harder to get people back around to your original point.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you pretty much just laid it out perfectly.
This is why I like the game, guys. This is why I enjoy these seasons, even when other people don't. Just in case people were wondering.
I feel like I just got a real peek into how it would be to actually work with Taryn if we were playing Big Brother.
Well, I wouldn't have said that to you. I wouldn't have said any of that to you until I had already, like, firmly decided in my mind, because I wouldn't want to give you the route I don't want you to take, which is what Cody just did with Nicole. Now that she has this route in front of her, Tyler can go now. Yes, that's what I want. Now, if he changes his mind again, he'll have to talk her back around, and that's what we don't want. Is that difficulty level, right? So, it's interesting. It's interesting. All right. Speaking of Cody, I did want to talk about this. Cody now has 6 competition wins this season, 3 HOHs and 3 vetoes. He has 4 competitions left to play, assuming he is able to win all of them. That means, I talked about this during the Big Brother Canada 7 Pretty Boys reign. He does have the option of beating Janelle's record of 9 competition wins in one season. It's possible.
The option. That's funny to me. Like, he's going to be like, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I might do it. We'll see how I'm feeling tomorrow morning, you know. But yeah, I mean, that is, I feel like his competition wins, I know it's so hard when you're in the Big Brother house to actually wake up and, like, see what's going on and see what's around you and understand, you know, who's running the show, because, you know, you're trapped in the house. You can't see everything. And, you know, what you perceive is, of course, your reality. But at this point, like, Cody won this POV, and I'm not sure how the results, like, ultimately panned out. I'm not sure if, like, he literally had to win it, otherwise, like, something else was going to happen. But, you know,
Nicole,
like,
came in second, but it was a timed competition, so he had no way of knowing.
Right. Okay. But I just feel like this might be the point. I mean, maybe the game is just too stacked in his favor that now no one else can even counter it at this point. But I'd hope that after he wins this POV, people are like, yo, this dude is killing it in the competitions. We, like, there's no way any of us can sit with him in the end. I don't know, though.
If you only, yeah. If only.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show. So the possibilities there. He also has 12 competition wins, and this is HOHs and vetoes over his career in Big Brother now. Paul has the most with 14. So if he wins three, then he will overtake Paul in the all-time competition. I believe Janelle has 13 total.
Does that count Battle of the Block? Are we doing that? Okay.
So we don't count that nonsense.
Beautiful. This should be renamed the Scenarios Podcast with Jose doing his GIF. Scenarios.
That's every podcast.
What if this happens? Scenarios, baby.
So we'll see. So like I said, there's five competitions left total, but he can't win all five of them, because he's not competing in the final five HOH. He will only be competing in the final five veto, final four HOH and veto, and then the final three competition. And you don't count parts one and three as two competitions. No, sir.
I feel like Cody will find his, he'll figure out some kind of way to win the final five HOH, even though he's not eligible, you know.
The game's
just been going his way too much. You know, he just dominate the rest of it.
Sorry, I'm still laughing at Taryn saying no, sir.
All right. So anything else from the week that you guys want to talk about before we get into the Legacy Watch here?
Everything I have to say is more just like on an individual player level. So if we do the Legacy Watch, that'll give me a chance to talk.
All right. Sounds good. It seems like the decision came down mostly in the let's evict Tyler camp, and that they're also talking about potentially blindsiding Tyler if they do it. So we'll see.
I'd love to watch a Tyler blindside. Although I don't know if it fully would be a blindside because he's just totally expecting that he's going to go home. But I would love to see a shocked Tyler. Although I don't know if that actually is in the cards.
I feel like he'd be more shocked if he stayed. It would be like the Nicole Anthony blindside where she stays.
Yeah. I think the reason Cody wants to blindside him is that he wants Tyler to at least have it's essentially what Tyler did to Brett and Rachel, is that just at least a little bit of hope that, like, don't burn Cody and Nicole too much, because there's a chance they might vote to keep you. There's a chance you're wrong and that they're telling the truth and that they might actually keep you. And then he is not as incentivized to go to Memphis and rat things out. Now, Tyler has already expressed that he has that he will go to Memphis and try to get a last minute vote from him. But we'll see where that goes.
I also feel like Tyler would be like, if you were going to blindside anyone in this house, it would be Tyler, because Tyler is not the type of person to be in the jury house and really be stewing and bitter about it. You know what I mean? I feel like once Tyler is evicted, even if he's blindsided, he'll be over it. He'll vote for whoever played the best game.
If Tyler Crispin goes to the jury house and says, you know, he could have told me, like, no, sir.
There's no way that would ever happen. That would
No, sir.
Yeah. I had something else, but I forgot. Oh man. It had something to do with Tyler or something. I don't know. Well, I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Anyway. Yeah, maybe when we get through the Legacy Watch, we'll be able to figure out what that was.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Tyler should have put Cody and Enzo on the block in the triple.
I mean, why? Wait, why did he? Well, I guess it's just because, you know, you never really know with the triple. I mean, I know that he knows that Enzo did cross him, but also, you know, like, what are the ramifications of that? Like, where does that leave Tyler? You know, that I think that is just the problem with the triple in general, is that no one actually has time to really plot out and plan anything, since this all, especially with the triple, like, something just happened and now you just need to make another quick decision. So if Tyler, again, was playing 4D chess and thinking 8 million steps ahead, then yeah, that would be the right move. But I also feel like that's just not the human move to make, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, the only way that that happens, I don't even think that, like, even if it wasn't a triple where everything was going so fast, I think he still would have, if he had won, put up Danny and Nicole. I think Danny, when Tyler won the veto, could have ratted out Enzo and have gotten an Enzo-Nicole situation on the block, which would have been worst-case scenario for Cody, other than, obviously, him being on the block. But, yeah, I just don't see how that could have happened, especially after he just tried to vote out Nicole. He knows Danny's coming after him. He just tried to blindside Nicole and it didn't work. How can he leave those two girls off the block and go after two people that he thinks he can still salvage something with, you know?
I also know that, like, people have been saying, like, you know, Tyler, like, it's too early to take out Danny because Danny is just going to be such a looming, like, you can just kind of keep her in and just, like, use her as kind of a foil to yourself. But also, I think that there might be a certain point where Cody might realize, you know what, Danny trusts me and I trust Danny more than I trust Tyler. So, you know what? I'm going to just take out Tyler before I take Danny. And so, you know, it might actually, it could have ruined his game potentially if, you know, he kept Danny in because she just wanted him out. You know, it got embarrassing after a certain point. She just, if she did not get him out, then, you know, her game would have been over.
Yeah, I just feel like once Enzo doesn't vote with you on the Nicole issue, something that you've been talking about all season long, you have to realize Enzo is not with you. And if Enzo is not with you, that means Cody is with him. Nicole is with Cody. They're all three of them together. That's bad. And why is Danny the person you're going after the most when Cody is the biggest comp threat and Cody is the one that has the most amount of connections and is probably, you know, holding this group together? I just feel like you have to take some kind of shot at that point. You have to realize that you're screwed either way and you have to go big or go home. And what's happening here is that he's probably going home because he didn't go big. He might have gone home anyway. Who knows? Maybe Memphis votes Enzo out over Cody. And then Enzo leaves and Cody's still here and he evicts Tyler this week anyway. But here's the thing. With Danny in the game, Cody's not as comfortable with Nicole, I bet. I bet he still feels like they might have a final two still, and he's still got to kind of deal with that. Right now, he's so comfortable because he has Nicole on one side, Enzo on the other side, and they're both immensely loyal to him in the middle, and he can just kind of sit here and feel like, I don't even need to, I can focus on other people.
He's in the exact Tyler spot from Big Brother 20 with Casey on one side and Angela on the other. Like, he's so comfortable and we're penciling him in for the final two because he has two people who would literally lose for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I had. I needed to say that. I was streaming on Twitch watching the triple and I was running through scenarios in my head for Tyler. And I was like, he has to do it. He has to do it. He's not
scenarios. Go. Yeah.
Scenarios.
All right.
No, sir.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's move on to the Legacy Watch. So this morning, I tweeted out a survey for the Legacy Watch where I ask the audience to tell me where they think the players this season reside on the tier in terms of their legacy. So we have the bottom tier, low tier, middle tier, upper tier, top tier, and the Big Brother Pantheon. Legacy means whatever you want it to mean. It's often very tied to gameplay, but it's also about character, how you feel about them, all sorts of whatever mixture you have for how you determine a player's legacy. So far, we've seen some major shifts from the preseason to this season, and then some decent shifts, some slower shifts throughout the season as the game has gone on. So I'm curious to see what happens here with the Legacy Watch this week. Do you guys have any major predictions? Maggie, what do you think?
I think Danny is going to fall a lot. I think Tyler might go up a little bit because right now he's in a bit of an underdog position. I think that David might fall back down to that bottom tier that he's
rock
been,
bottom, rock bottom for
that
day.
He's like, been waffling on. But yeah, let's see. Phil, I'm ready to be happy.
Yeah, I basically echo Maggie, but I honestly think that now that we've just seen like David, just especially just we'll get into it, but I also just think that David is just going to just be maybe known as like, you know, top 20 like worst Big Brother players of all time. So
oh boy. Well, I can tell you that David has maintained his bottom of the low tier spot.
Wow.
Yes. He stayed the same from last week. He is just barely clinging on at the bottom of the low tier. He is not a bottom tier player, says the audience.
Is it because for me, I thought that he would just be totally bottom tier because, you know, the edit kind of portrayed him as just being an idiot for taking the 10K, even though, you know, now that he's evicted, that's not a bad idea. So maybe that is why he's just not at the bottom tier, because taking the 10K actually ended up being a good thing for him. He walks away with something in his pocket, you know?
Yeah, I think also the way he went out was one of those moments where you're like, no, how dare Enzo do that? Like, we wanted David to stay, which kind of like leaves David with a nice aftertaste, you know?
I guess, but like, maybe that's true. Maybe it is because if David did actually stay like longer in the game, you know, if he made it to the final six, we would just be like, oh man, it's like we have five power players and then we have David here. David's just not going to do a single thing. And maybe then he would have been bottom tier. But I guess it's true. He went out, you know, early enough where it's just like, you know, he was just a person in the game, I guess, in All Stars.
I think people also liked that he annoyed the committee members by taking the $10,000. They actually liked the $10,000 because it annoyed everyone so much.
I think the audience is soft. And they're being nice, and maybe by the end of the season he'll go back to the bottom, but I think that they feel a little bad that he left the way
I'm gonna make a bold claim then. I think David is too low on this list. I want David higher. I loved watching David all season long. I felt like he brought so much entertainment to me. Was he the right fit for this season? No. But I liked watching him, and I liked that he annoyed people, and he had a good attitude about the game, which I enjoyed as well.
Yeah, I think though, like, this is just a postseason reaction, or just a post David reaction, where we're still in like the moment where we have no one else to root for, so I guess we're just gonna do this underdog David thing because let's just see how far he can get. But you know, like you were saying, like give it a year, or just even just give it like a few months, and then we're all gonna be like, man, remember that guy David? What an idiot. Or not an idiot, but you know, what a horrible player he was at the game. So give it a little bit more time. Maybe it'll go down, but you know, I think we're all just like kind of living in that hype for right now.
Yeah, Phil, I predict that a year from now, when someone brings up David, I'm just gonna laugh. You know, like it's gonna like tickle me that David was on this season. And right now I'm a little bit like, David. But I feel like by the time we have a bit of distance, I'll like laugh at the fact that, you know, he told Davon he was in a non-existent boys alliance.
For me, I think it's funny that like that he was, I think, casted as like, you know, like just this normal guy, you know what I mean? And he was just make a little bit of a mastermind or whatever. And BB21, I mean, but now he's turned into just this total character. The show has almost kind of turned him into this unintentional, like we laugh at him, but he doesn't know that we're laughing at him. He's turned into this whole thing, even though that's just not who he was intentionally casted as.
You guys just aren't anticipating that 2 years from now, David is the regular Thursday podcast guest, analyzing the game, talking about how, the thing about the veto competition is sometimes you don't even need to, you know what I mean?
How would you not watch a David? Like, David and Ovi should just get together and do a podcast after this season. I feel like that would be amazing. Just watching Ovi try to constantly explain the game to David, and he'll just be like, well, I've actually played more days than you in the game. I feel like from my perspective, and then he just say whatever nonsense for 25 minutes and then the podcast would be over.
I want to see David and Ovi do a podcast about emotional intelligence.
There you go. Above David on the Legacy Watch is Nicole Anthony, who has actually continued to drop this week, that she is continuing to go down. Nicole Anthony is seeing the most movement post-season post-eviction that I have seen. And it's just that it continues to drop. She was only barely above David and is also clinging to the bottom of the low tier here, very close to the bottom tier. I don't know what it is, but she just continues to fall.
That doesn't really make that much sense to me, because I feel like we during the season, we just live in a hype and we can just totally hate someone within 1 week and then forget about them the next week. And that's how I feel about Nicole. I feel like I'm surprised that not more people feel that way, where it's like, you know, we love Nicole BB21. And then, you know, and see week two of this season, you know, a lot of people were just really trashing on her, which is unfortunate, you know, but I would expect that now, you know, so much has happened since then. We're over that. I feel like we should just be over that. I'm confused as to why she is falling. And I hope that doesn't continue, because I'm sure she's a lovely person. You know, I don't know. I think she's a positive force in the Big Brother community. So that's unfortunate.
Mm. I think it's going to come down to, you know, a year from now. Like, if we're talking about this a year from now, like, if people are going to remember Nicole for her time on Big Brother 21, or if people are going to remember Nicole for her last week on All Stars. And I don't know what the answer is. If she keeps falling, you know, it might be the recency bias of this. But I don't know. We'll have to. I think it'll be a time will tell situation, like it will with David.
Yeah, I mean, it's feeling like it might be the latter, that it's going to be, people are going to remember her for Big Brother 22. And I think that also maybe part of this is that people are looking back at her Big Brother 21 game, which was already kind of like, you know, You were being generous. If you were like, she did pretty good. Like, and I remember, I think I gave her maybe a 6 after the season. That's just my estimate. Which I still feel like was a fair score for that season. But you look back at it now, and I think that you probably, whereas before a lot of people were like, oh, Cliff was the reason she lost. And now people are a little more like, Cliff might have been the reason she made it so far.
I feel like that also just makes sense when you look at like All Stars 1. And, you know, I feel like when I think about Allison, when I think about Nokomis, I think about their original seasons, not their later seasons. But I think that is because they were better game players. So I think you do have a point that, you know, now I'm reevaluating everything. And I think everyone's kind of doing the same thing. But, you know, I think I'm still going to kind of just think about how she was with Cliff, how she was with Jackson. Shouldn't we just be kind of happy about the Nicole that we once had before, you know, all this happened? I guess we can't, though.
I guess not. All right. Above Nicole Anthony is still Christmas here. And there was, she actually moved up a little bit this week. I think the underdog status potentially is going to help her. If she stays this week, I think that will also help her, as she is going to continue to be an underdog moving forward. And if she wins some comps, that's going to help as well. But here she is. No serious movement overall. Still going to land behind Kevin here in the low tier.
I mean, she did make it to the final six, which is, I mean, pretty great. She made it to the final six in two seasons. And, you know, depending on how she might make it a little bit further. But I think, you know, it makes sense that she did kind of rise up a little bit, because it is an accomplishment to make it to the final six in two seasons, regardless of how good of a player you are. I guess, like, you know, she did something, you know, she maybe she's a loyal ally to a fault, but that's still something. You know,
and, you know, I have the same problem rating her that, like, when you rank winners, it's like if you threw this person into a game, you know, however many times, how many times would they win? And that's if that's how you're going to rank the winners. I have a hard time with Christmas because I feel like if I threw Christmas into a game, however many times, she almost always makes jury. And almost always goes deep in jury. So, but I don't know if Christmas ever wins. So it's hard. I feel she's hard to rate in that way, because she's, you know, she doesn't really have a ton of winner potential, but she has a ton of potential to make it really make a really deep run.
Well, here's the thing about that, though, is that I think she is the, like, the loyal soldier archetype, which I think, especially in modern Big Brother, is a very valuable archetype that will make it far a lot of times. Like, Casey was very much in a similar vein. The problem with the loyal soldier archetype is that you need to be on the right side. You need to be the loyal soldier to the winning side. And you can't always predict which side that's going to be. If you're a loyal soldier to the losing side, then you have no equity at all in the game whatsoever. So that's difficult. And then it's, of course, the end game. Can she get to the end and then win from playing that kind of game? And so I think, you know, the best kind of player is a loyal soldier that can, on top of that, make some strategic moves. And that actually is who Christmas is. She actually does have that strategic acumen on top. She's willing to turn on her former allies like Tyler. She's willing to make moves and lie to people and be a little more proactive than other loyal soldiers are. The problem is that she's also a little more loyal than other loyal soldiers are at times. And she has these moments where she's telling her allies, don't use the veto on me, where she's telling her allies in the final three, you don't need to take me. And that is what I think will end up costing her more often than not as a player. And it's something that I think the audience also just can never really respect unless you also win, right?
Christmas is like the female beast mode cowboy.
Yeah, I would essentially say the same thing. Yeah. Where
I mean, I think Beast Mode Cowboy though was like really a puppet, and I feel like Christmas, even on Paul, even with Paul, was more of a. And I know people are going to disagree with me on this, but she was more of a partner than a puppet to Paul than like a Beast Mode Cowboy was to Derek. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make total sense to me. I think another reason why I think feel like Christmas has risen a little bit is just like with what happened with like Otev, like last weekend, where it's like, or last week where, you know, Otev was kind of just like getting on her because, you know, she's crazy. But the show kind of got into that. Everyone's reactions were kind of like shocked. Everyone was like, oh, no, I have to live with Christmas, which I feel like is kind of funny. You know, I feel like the show is kind of embracing what Christmas really isn't, is that, you know, yeah, she's a little bit unhinged sometimes. So I feel like that is more entertaining than just being like the loyal soldier, you know, that people have been saying.
And I think also legacy wise, she really like embodies that loyal soldier archetype so well now. Like when you think about like a dominant alliance using the loyal soldier, you're probably going to think about Christmas from this point. Like she's going to really represent an entire archetype. And that legacy wise, I think is important. So, all right. Above Christmas is still Kevin, who's going to land here toward the top of the low tier. He did move up from last week, but not significantly enough to escape the low tier. This is probably where Kevin is going to land overall. I also feel like for this season, low tier makes sense. If I'm trying to gauge Kevin's overall legacy, I think it's a lot higher. I think it's at least middle tier personally. I honestly would still have Kevin in the upper tier just from what happened on his first season, standing up to Braden, making it to the final three, coming so close, getting beaten by Jordan, coming up with the last minute lie. The legacy that he has is still so great, and his love for the game and just the appreciation he had for being there. I think this season he is now considered an all-star. I think that is worth something. I think that in this moment people feel low on Kevin, but I'm curious to know if over time this starts to the bitterness about Kevin this season starts to fade and he starts to rise back up.
I think my thing with Kevin though is always that, like, I should like him. I should totally be rooting for him, but he is just, he was very, very, you know, his reads were wrong. And also he was just mopey for most of the season, that it was just uncomfortable, not uncomfortable to watch, but it was just frustrating to watch after a while.
He's like Eeyore.
Yeah. So for me, like another, just a thing that with Kevin is that I also just did love him on Big Brother 11, but also I feel like, For some weird reason, maybe just because people don't remember Big Brother 11 that well, but people don't really remember Kevin that much. And so even the fans who were excited about Kevin, the fans who did know Kevin from Big Brother 11, you know, the great player, when they came into the season, they were not rooting for him. I don't know. I personally think that, like, maybe he should be a little bit higher because he did play a good game, but I feel like this is somewhat of an adequate spot for him, unfortunately, this season. We'll see how he votes in the jury.
I feel like people will be mad at me for saying this, but I think that Kevin is a much better player than most of the people in the middle tier and even some of the people in the upper tier. And I'm sorry, but he was mopey and whiny and, you know, all of that, like all of these things that we've been saying are true. But I think that you throw Kevin into a season 100 times and he is an upper tier player. He got dealt a bad hand here. And I think that some of these people who are rated higher than him, like, are pre-jury players most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that is easy to forget about games like Big Brother is that, like, most people are good players in certain circumstances, and their entire game is to keep those circumstances existing as long as possible, where they maintain how good they are. And some players are just at the mercy of, what cast am I put into? What kind of twists are there? What kind of competitions are there? And for some players, they'll come into a season and this is exactly what they need. They're a great player in this circumstance. And I think that Kevin is a great player in a game where there are two sides, where there are big personalities, people are fighting. Kevin is exactly the kind of person that understands how to worm his way to the end and sneak out a win from somebody. He knows how to make that happen. And that does happen on Big Brother a decent amount. Not recently, but it does happen. He's not one of these big alliances dominate the game players. And in those circumstances, it's very clear he's pretty bad. And even then, he did last quite a while. He outlasted a lot of other people. And with a little bit of different luck, he might have been able to weasel his way a little bit further. But it's still pretty clear that he does not know how to play in this kind of game. And he looked like a rookie trying to play with vets in this kind of game. But if the season had ever split open at any point, who knows what kind of game we could have seen him play. And I think that's something to note when we're judging any player in terms of their ability, is what kind of game were they given in a season.
I think that's a really good point, Taryn. But I will say though that I feel like Kevin lasted this long, not really because of his ability, but because of his almost like lack of ability, or almost because they knew, the house guests always knew they could get rid of Kevin at any point. And they just, like, I'm not going to waste an HOH on Kevin this week because he is not, I feel like he wasn't really doing that much socially. I know like he works better in, you know, two alliances rather than just like, you know, one big alliance stacked up against him, but his social game wasn't really doing that much for him this season. And, you know, I feel like it just took him being up against David where they were like, all right, let's just get rid of this guy. But I feel like he was just exposable to the house as opposed to like a real social commodity, someone who like they needed to work with.
Well, know? See what I if we're going to take away like an appreciation for Kevin's Big Brother 22 game, my appreciation for it would be that of all of the people outside of the power structure, I feel like David was the one that was really brung along because of how bad he was at times. Whereas Kevin, he had won, he did win a competition. He did come close to winning a few different competitions as well as having his own, win. And I think what he did well was the sort of like the sucking up, the like, hey, every time somebody nominated him, he went into that HOH room. He had a conversation with that HOH and he came in the HOH after he left was like, I don't want him to go. I really like Kevin. I don't want him to go. I don't even want to nominate him, but I have to. And it was that kind of thing that kept him alive as he went on the block time after time, in my opinion. And I think there's an appreciation that we can have for that, even though the rest of his game was pretty bad, was really bad, especially in terms of like his reads and the overall strategy. But I think that that's a transferable skill, where like in a better spot, he can use that same kind of disarming nature to continue to do well in the game. So just, you know, we look at things from all sides here.
The chat didn't like that one.
chat is one side. They don't like the other side.
It's okay. I understand, guys. I knew it was going to be a hot take.
Scenarios, right. Different scenarios. You always scenarios. Back to that.
Above Kevin is still Bailey here in the middle tier. She has maintained the middle tier, although she has also fallen a little bit from last week. She seems to be somebody that as the season is, or as she is sort of like leaving the spotlight, as the spotlight is no longer on Bailey, the score continues to drop. But she is still in the middle tier, although it is kind of close. She is definitely in danger of falling down into the low tier here.
I don't know, but like Maggie was saying before, if you put, you know, Christmas in the house a certain amount, like 100 times, I feel like Christmas is going to like make it to the, like make it pretty far, like, you know, like a majority of those times. I feel like this is just one of those situations where Bailey just didn't make it that far. But I also think that Bailey is not a bad player, and there are countless situations where I feel like Bailey would be able to kind of make it much farther than she unfortunately did. I'm still surprised that she went home pre-jury, because I feel like the reason why she went home was not 100% her fault, you know? So I will say that I wish that Bailey got one more opportunity to really prove herself, to, you know, make it up higher in the tiers, because I don't find her to be a horrible player.
I completely agree. I think that Bailey is better than being at the bottom of the middle tier. But when I went to do this today and I was looking at it, I was like, oh, Bailey should be like low middle tier. I think just because of boot order, you know, like that's what was in my head. But then when I actually sat and thought about it, Bailey is a good player. And I think that she deserves better than middle tier. But I understand, we've been trudging through this season. It's felt like 47 years and you're like, oh, those people left so early. And like, what even, whatever, you know, like, so So I understand why she's in this place, but I do think that she is perhaps slightly better than, you know, bottom middle tier.
Yeah. Bailey. I mean, I've talked about this before, but Bailey, I just feel like has so much potential as a player. And she's played twice and she's shown that potential twice. And both times it wasn't like, oh, it was a foregone conclusion that Bailey was evicted here. Both times it was like, she's doing well. She's doing, oh, ooh, oh, and she's gone. Like that, like, so it feels like she's got more to show, but like she's very prone to like little things tripping her up, I think. And that is always going to be a danger. I feel like, you know, when we talk about like adaptability as a skill, I feel like her adaptability is where she needs to improve in terms of her gameplay. Social game is great. Strategic game even can be pretty good. It's just a matter of like, when those little things start to trip you up, are you going to fall flat on your face? Or are you going to quickly maneuver and reposition and get back on track? And that is where she has not been able to do well.
That's such a good point. Like, I think that that's her exact thing, because I don't think that it's fair when people call her like too emotional, or because I don't think that like that's it, that she's too emotional. Like Christy is emotional. I don't think that Bailey is like emotional is the right way to phrase it. I think adaptable, the word that you said, is the right thing to point out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you do make a great point that like I was like really hoping that like, unlike Swaggy C, you know, I know Swaggy C like retired, quote unquote, retired from reality TV. And I was hoping that, you know, maybe we got to see one more chance of Bailey coming back, or we, you know, I want to see something. But also, I do totally agree that, you know, she might also just fall in the same spot of just, you know, having one little thing trip her up. Same thing happened to her even in the challenge. You know, she got focused on one thing and that kind of just became kind of what her the rest of her game was, you know. So I would hope that she would not fall into that same trap. But I feel like she has not made it far enough into the Big Brother game where she will be able to improve on those chances, you know. So maybe, you know, this is just the end of Bailey, and this is just the spot for her, unfortunately. Even though I always love to see Bailey on my TV screen, I feel like she's great television.
Yeah. All right. Above Bailey last week was Keisha and then Danny. I was curious to see if Danny would fall below Keisha, but she did not. Keisha remains above Bailey, and there she stands here. She did. She stayed about the same this week. No real movement for Keisha. And I really feel like the more the time goes on, the more, and I think I even said this at the time, that I felt like Keisha leaving first was not really an indication of where Keisha was in the game. I mean, now that we're, you know, 9 weeks in, do we really feel like Keisha deserved to go from top tier to middle tier because she was a first boot in a game that had a lot of, you know, pregame relationships and, you know, stuff that she was an alternate for and didn't talk to anyone and just kind of got hit by a stray bullet that wasn't even meant for her, because she wouldn't have even been gone if Kacer hadn't won that first safety suite. Like, I really feel like Keisha is getting screwed here in the Legacy Watch, and deserves to be higher.
I feel like a lot of that does have to do with her edit. You know what I mean? Where just her edit in the first week was very like, oh, Keisha's not cut out for this anymore. Keisha, you know, she played all right in Big Brother 10, but, you know, she's just not good at this modern Big Brother game, which I don't think is entirely true. Although, you know, if Keisha did stay all around a little longer, I mean, how do you think she would have done? I mean, again, it is just kind of the luck of the draw. She probably would have gone out still like maybe week four or something like that instead of week one, but it's interesting to see. But yeah, I also think that, like, who cares? Week one doesn't really, going out week one, like, that's not even part of your resume.
Yeah, and it's not a scenario where she did it to herself. Like, because I'm seeing people in the chat say, oh, she played terribly that first week, though. I disagree. I really do. I feel like she didn't put it on herself. She was put up on the block as a backup plan. And she was put up on the block next to a pawn, and she wasn't able to figure out how to change things. But literally nobody else this season has been able to figure out how to change things. Nobody in this entire cast has flipped a vote so far. Every single week, the majority has decided, and that's what's happened. And I think the first week, people are like still judging Keisha super hard because, like, oh, she failed to change the vote that week because we still had expectations that the votes should be changed. But But they didn't change, and we're like, oh, wow, can't believe she failed to do this. But then subsequently, every single other person failed to do it to this day. No person on the block has changed a vote in this season at all. So I really feel like it's we judged her so harshly in the beginning. I feel like we really should take a look back and be like, you know what? Does it really diminish what she did in Big Brother 10? And so much that that she, you know, she went out first here in this specific situation. I say
no, sir, to her being in the middle tier. No, sir.
Also, I just feel like it's week one in All Stars. Like, what do you want these people to do? Like, I don't think anyone is going to really throw away anything or change up anything for Keisha. You know, it's just like, let's just get. Let's keep the game going. I feel like all the house guests would never do anything like that for Keisha, especially in an all-star season.
Mm-hmm. All right. So above Keisha is Dani. She is going to stay here. She actually moved up from last week. Just a tad. She's basically where she was at before, toward the top of the middle tier, a decent ways away from Keisha, actually. And going out in the triple eviction, she is going to lock her place in. I actually feel like if Dani had a whole week to sit on the block, she probably would have actually gone up, because I think she would not have taken it lying down, and she would have created some good TV, and that would have helped, you know, for at least 1 week we would have seen the Dani of old. But you know, the way she went out, it was so fast, and now you're just going to remember the Dani that we saw all season.
I totally agree. I have so much to say about Dani. I think that Dani, if we are looking at this season in a vacuum, I like watching Dani on feeds and watching her all season long, I would think that she's like not a good player at all. Like, I would think that she's a bad player. But the way that in the triple when she was put up, the way that she reacted, the fire that she brought in that exit interview with Julie, I was so sad. I was like, thank gosh, it's still there. Like, Dani is still there. We still have her. We were robbed of this girl all season long. And that's why it was so frustrating. I was trying to figure out why I was so frustrated all season long with Dani. And like, beyond just like me not liking her gameplay, I was so frustrated with her. And it's because the Dani that I remember from 13, who like gave him hell, like wasn't there. And she finally came out, you know, after she had left. And I do think you're right. I think that if we had gotten a full week with Dani on the block, it would have been awesome. It would have been the best week of Big Brother All-Stars. And she would have gone up because people respect a fighter, and Dani is a fighter. And we got to see her be comfortable the whole game because nobody wanted her to fight. So everybody placated her. Everyone lied to her. Everybody made sure that she was as comfortable as possible. And if the second that that fire was lit under her, like, I just am so, I'm just so sad that we missed out.
I'm sure another reason why people probably voted her lower than I personally think that she deserves is just because after she was evicted, everyone was like, oh, one of the greatest players of all time, one of the greatest players I've ever played with, even though, you know, they all just evicted her. So I don't really think that any of them should say that. But I'm sure a lot of people were upset about that. And a lot of people said, you know, she's not that great. You know, I personally think that, you know, I think she has a great mind for the game. And I think she is like somewhat, she's a good social player. Like when Dani talks to you, you are comfortable with her. Now, I will say that she's almost, her aggression is what kind of, yeah, you know, it's that she's such an aggressive player is that everyone can kind of see through that, and they're able to kind of, you know, be able to stop that. It's the same thing. I feel like that's what happened in Big Brother 13. You know, it's just always, she plays way too hard, but I think she's a good social player. I think she's a great strategic player. No, I feel she has a great strategic mind, and it's unfortunate that she went out in this spot. I mean, she went out a week later than she did in Big Brother 13, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's, to me, this whole season for Dani has felt like, you know, like in a movie where there's like a kingdom and there's like there's a king, but he's a powerless king, and the real power is the advisor to the king, like Aladdin or something, right? Like that's that was close. Like you had Jafar, like Cody is Jafar, and Danny was the dude,
Sultan.
The Sultan. Thank you. And Danny, as the Sultan, thought that she ran the kingdom. But really it was Cody as Jafar. But the difference is that the Sultan in Aladdin was like a nice guy, but Danny was like Danny was the king that thinks he's running things, that like has a temper. And so everyone is just placating. Everyone is just like, you are such a great ruler. You are such a great ruler. Okay, Cody. What are we doing? And so like Danny had the potential to be explosive, and to like really cause chaos in the kingdom. But everybody kept her calm. Everybody was like, no, you're good. You're doing amazing. And she'd be like, hey, your best friend actually hates you. And they'd be like, oh my God, I totally believe that. Oh, my best friend sucks. And then they go to their best friend and be like, the king's trying to get us to go against each other. Like that was Danny's whole game. And then there was just a very quick coup that happened in the triple fiction, and off went her head. Like it just before she had a chance to do anything.
I think also just like in the show's edit too, it's like they were setting up the downfall of Danny in like week three, even. Like it took like a long time to kind of just actually have that pay off. So the rest of the season was kind of just like waiting for this moment where we were all expecting Danny to go home early on. We just kind of were waiting for it to eventually happen. So it wasn't like a major blindside for everyone. So, you know, it makes her seem like a worse player. I totally agree, Taryn.
Yeah.
Also, the exit press has been a bit rough. The video.
That's the thing where she's like, I was the Derek to Cody's Cody. Yeah. And that's why he took me out, because he didn't want to make the same mistakes he did the first time. And so he took out the Derek. And it's just like, that's literally where my king metaphor came from, is that she thought she was Derek. But she wasn't Derek. And that's an issue.
Yeah, I appreciated how honest she was, like when she was talking about how like she actually was blindsided. She didn't like say like, oh, I expected it. You know what I mean? I appreciated how honest she was. But sometimes her honesty, yeah, can make her kind of seem, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. The problem is that she's the Frankie. That's who she was. Cody was the Derek. She was the Frankie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean. And you know how we all look at Frankie. I definitely think she's better than Frankie, but yeah.
I actually disagree. I think Frankie played a better game than she did.
No, I meant I like Danny more than I like Frankie. Sorry. Wow. But yeah, no, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, legacy-wise, I mean, when I'm looking at Danny's gameplay, season 8, you know, went a certain way for certain reasons.
She was 19, but yeah.
Season 13. She did okay. She made some bad moves. She kind of screwed herself over. Season 22, she probably played her best game to some degree. Actually, no, you know what? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say she did not play her best game. I'm going to say 13 was her best game. That even though she made some big mistakes, you know, Luan being one of them, and going against her alliance earlier than she needed to, making it obvious, that sort of thing. Not great stuff, but I feel like she still came closer to winning that game than she did this one. And in this season, she was technically in a better position in terms of like the power structure, but she was such on the bottom of that power structure. It was, she needed to flip on her alliance and didn't. And so I actually feel like it was not great overall this season. And I'm looking at Danny as a player. I'm really just, she's never really been higher than like a middle tier player. When I'm looking at legacy, she's definitely got a legacy. I mean, she's been on 3 times. She met her husband on the show. She's like grown up with the show. I do feel like she has a firm place legacy wise, but I do think her status as a player is really what's dragging her down at this point.
Yeah, sure. I totally agree. I also just think that, like, you know, it's an interesting evolution to watch. Like, You know, she was a total goat in Big Brother 8. You know what I mean? I even think that Zach might have beaten her. But, you know, she has evolved as a player, and we can kind of appreciate that. I don't know. She's kind of grew up with the show. And I also think that, like, I'm trying to think. I'm while you were talking, I was trying to think of, like, what game do I consider her best game? And I would have said I disagreed with you about how Big Brother 13 was her best game. But I think I've turned around, and I do agree, because, you know, Big Brother 13, like, it kind of took a lot to finally get Dani out of the house. You know what I mean? Like, she could, if she did not evict Lawan, I could see Dani kind of actually potentially winning the game, you know?
And the Lawan mistake was even more of a mistake because of, like, if that twist never exists in the first place, then it's done. Like, Lawan doesn't even go home that week, and Brendan doesn't come back, and now she's in a much better spot. So she did get twist screwed a bit there as well.
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, Big Brother 13 was her best game, and I guess Big Brother 22, she was, I feel like she was in her best head state for the game, but her actual game itself, you know, was not apt.
Yeah. And, you know, for one last time, shouldn't have turned on Janelle. All right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Taryn, did you listen to her exit interview with Rob?
What did she say?
She said that she wanted to work with Janelle, but Janelle was saying her name first. And then Rob at the end said that he has to check with you about that. So I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I was actually curious about that because...
Oh, I mean...
I have a feeling I know what the answer is going to be.
Well, here's the deal. On the feeds, that is 100% not true. I do not know what went down in the pregame. I remember that when... the game started, Dominic tweeted something along the lines of, like, hey guys, the game did not start yesterday. It started a while ago. So there's a chance that she's talking about something that happened in the pregame. We still don't know what might have happened in the pregame. But as far as the live feeds go, if she's trying to claim that Janelle said her name first in the house, that is for sure a lie. She went after Janelle hard, and Janelle was always very positive about Dani. Even after she had a reason to go after Dani, she didn't go after Dani because she trusted their pregame deal so much.
And it was the first conversation on the feeds. I remember night one, I turned on the feeds, and the first thing we saw was Dani and Nicole talking, Dani saying that in that photo room, saying that Janelle needed to go. But yeah.
Yeah. So I think I said on an update or something that, like, I expected her to pretend that she was justified. So, yeah. Anyway, above Dani, we have Davon in the upper tier. Just barely holding on in the upper tier. Literally, hundredths of points away from dropping into the low tier. That is where Davon stands as of right now. That is another drop from last week. It seems like a lot of the evicted players are actually dropping. It's not just Nicole Anthony, it seems. So here we go. Davon clinging to life in the upper tier here.
Yeah, this is just, I feel like it's super unfortunate just because, like, in the beginning of the game, especially, like, in the first, like, 3 weeks or so, I thought Davon was in such a great position. And I thought, you know, even the week before Davon went home, I thought, you know, Dave, like, Nicole and everybody and Dani, they want to keep her around. You know, maybe she could even end up making it to the final six. But once again, it did not happen. Davon did not make it as far as we all would have dreamed to. And so, you know, it is just unfortunate. And I don't think that Davon kind of has it in her to really, I never would expect Davon to win the game. And I think now everyone's kind of realizing that. I don't think that Davon really, unfortunately, has it in her. She's a great player. I mean, she's a great character. And we all love her, but also, you know, It's just she. I don't think she kind of has everything it takes that a good Big Brother player needs, I would say, unfortunately.
Yeah, gameplay wise, you know, this season I think really cemented. This is her third try and third like pretty solid failure game wise. It's hard to make any kind of game case for Davon. Personality wise, character wise, I think is where she is still upper tier. She has made so many good moments for the show. I think even that took a little bit of a hit with the David situation, but she is remaining on the upper tier here for now, Maggie.
Yep. I'm just going to echo everything everyone else said. I love Davon. I would like to see her on my television in lots of different capacities. But I don't think that her legacy is going to be her Big Brother chops.
Mm-hmm. It's weird because Davon actually started right around the same place she is now. She started at the very top of the middle tier. And that's the preseason. And so what happened was she went like up, down, up, and landed back at about where she was before. For me, I personally feel like she started much higher for me. Like I had her like at least top tier, and now I kind of feel like I understand upper tier. I get it.
I also kind of just feel like Davon, again, like Davon is a great character, but even this season, like what were the big TV moments? Like I feel like even her fight with Christmas was more, you know, it was more emotional than I feel like it was like a actually like just fantastic TV. So I mean, we still have the Jury House. We'll see what happens. We still have Jury House. So maybe she can kind of, you know, do something there. But I feel like Davon this season was just kind of unfortunately underwhelming all around. She was fun to watch, but also I just wish there was some big Davon moment. She, even when she walked out of the house, I expected her to kind of do something, but you know, again, this is a more emotional Davon, which I guess is a good thing, you know, cause it's growth, but also I feel like we just love Davon to get into fights with people and, you know, be dramatic and be awesome. And I love Davon. I don't know.
All right. Well, above Davon, Memphis Garrett, who has gone up from the middle tier into the upper tier. This is a overall in the preseason. He was just at the bottom of the upper tier. He went down and now he is back up into the upper tier. Just above Davon, still toward the bottom of the upper tier, but more firmly, much more firmly in it than Davon at this point. Surviving the triple, I think, was big. If Christmas stays this week, I think this is just the start. If Christmas leaves this week, I think this is his ceiling. Personally.
Yeah. I mean, Memphis is like, he's good. Unfortunately, I wish that it was not true, but he's pretty good at what he's been doing. I actually think that, you know, the reason that Memphis is succeeding and I would consider him a good player is because he doesn't try to be anything that he's not. He plays the way that someone who is like him, who has the demeanor like him, would expect him to play. Like he's not coming in trying to do anything. Like his directness really works for him. His like jerkiness works for him. He sort of fell backwards into this committee working, but it worked. And yeah, I mean, that's the reason I think that Memphis is rising and will continue to rise if Christmas stays, is because he plays the way that he needs to play. And he doesn't do what Danny did this season, where she's trying to play this mastermind game that is not the right way for a player like her to play. Memphis plays with the hand that he's dealt and he does it well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also just, I find like, it, for me, in Big Brother 10, Memphis was kind of just like milquetoast. He was just kind of Dan's loyal ally, just kind of just was, and he was just some dude that played and made it to the end and didn't get any votes. I don't know. Didn't have that many strong opinions on Memphis that season. But this season, I find Memphis to actually, you know, he kind of has like a hook for a character. You know what I mean? Like you were saying, like he's intense. He wants it one kind of way. And I feel like just with time, he's kind of just aged into some like just old, just like people are just saying like he's an old grump, you know, but it is like more of an exciting hook. And it makes me kind of, you know, I'd like to even root against Memphis. Like when I look back on this season, I'm going to definitely be like, think about like Memphis's character and think about, you know, how he made the committee. And, you know, it started off as a joke, but then it kind of turned into like a real alliance that dominated the game. And, you know, he's in the final six and he could continue to just beast it. I don't know. So I'm also like, I feel like this is a pretty good spot for Memphis. He's done a lot of just like great work this season, I guess, unfortunately, but good for him.
No, yeah. He's a fun villain. He's fun. He owns it. He says, bring it on. And I'm totally rooting against him. He's definitely a villain to me, but you know, shows need heroes and villains. So
Memphis, yeah. Memphis truly is a villain of old. Like, like he is the kind of villain that we used to see back in the Big Brother 10 days, where like some might call Cody the villain, but Cody's kind of like the protagonist in a way. Like, but he's the protagonist that like that many people do not root for. Where like Memphis is not meant to be rooted for. He's not the protagonist. He is the villain. But he's also like the villain in a way that is like most of the time, not over the top. I do not think that Memphis is perfect. I don't think he's the perfect villain, nor do I think he's close to it. I think that I do not like the way that he treated David. But in terms of like villainy, if we're comparing him to other villains in modern times, modern games, I think that he is up there in terms of that kind of villain. And he's doing well. He's doing well in this game, and he really could be the winner of this game, especially if Christmas stays. So,
and I think the other thing is that, like, the rest of the house guests also, like, they've all been talking about how Memphis is the villain of the season. They know Memphis is edited as the villain of the season. And like you were saying, Memphis owns it. So if he does make it to the end and he's like, yo, I was the villain, they're going to be like, you right. So good for you that you did this and you pulled it off. Like, you know, I don't know. So the fact that he does have that trait might actually help him in the long run. Yeah.
All right. Above Memphis, Ian Terry, who has fallen behind Nicole Franzel. And it's actually pretty close between Ian and Memphis. I have to imagine that this is the horse race here for the Legacy Watch. Can Memphis overtake Ian by the end of the game? Can he be the better renegade?
If he doesn't, then for Memphis, this season was for naught. He literally went on to prove that he was the better Dan ally than Ian. And I mean, he made it farther than him. But if he does not make it above him in the legacy rankings or in the stock watch, you know, Memphis is going to be pissed. This season was for naught.
Yeah. It would be, you know, if Memphis won, then both renegade members would have a win, and also the fake renegade member would also have just anybody that's ever called themselves a renegade, they go on the show, have an alliance of one called the renegade, and you'll win the game.
But yeah, for Ian this season, you know, I think this is honestly a little bit even, I think this is a great spot for Ian. I don't see him being any higher than this just because, you know, he has a great likable legacy in Big Brother 14, but I know everyone has kind of discussed that, you know, he's likable, but Dan ran the show. We all know that. And so this season we were all just waiting for Ian to actually pull it off. Can Ian do it? Can Ian actually play the game that he hyped his Big Brother 14 game up to be? And it didn't really pan out that way. It didn't pan out the way he wanted to, but also it took like four nominations to get him out, which is kind of a, like, you know, he got screwed a little bit, you know? So I will say that this is an adequate, a perfectly adequate spot for him, just because he was the first member of the jury, even though he kind of got screwed over, but that's just the way the game goes, you know?
You know, if we're talking about Ian as a player, I think it's a bit different than Ian's legacy, because, you know, Ian won in such an underdog position, and Ian this season went out in such a classy, awesome way. And you can just tell he really loves the game, and he's just like a really, really likable guy. And so for me, I think that he's just right here in the middle of the upper tier. I wouldn't be mad if he even went higher, because I'm a big Ian Terry fan. Like Julie said to him awkwardly on stage, I'm a big fan of you, Ian. I feel the same way, Julie.
I think he's going to need some serious good jury content if he wants to rise from here. He actually did fall along with many of the other people that are evicted this week. Not by a major amount, but by a little bit. Above Ian is Nicole. Here in the upper tier, it's about a mid upper tier here, even though she's toward the top in terms of the list, that she's about in the middle score wise. She did go up from last week by a decent little chunk here. She survived the triple eviction. She is heading into the final five safe. She is the only winner left in the game now. I don't know what's going to happen next week. The more I think about it, the more I feel like it's a mistake to keep Christmas, especially for Nicole. And I could easily see Nicole. I'm just thinking about the HOH competition. It's going to be Enzo and Nicole versus Christmas and Memphis. Like, my money is definitely on Christmas and Memphis there. And in that spot, Nicole is the target. And it's just a matter of not having Christmas on the block or Memphis on the block next to Nicole. Christmas certainly wouldn't do that. Memphis might. But if the veto is used in a certain way, then definitely Nicole goes home. Or if he's smart enough not to put Christmas on the block, which he seems like he probably would be, then who knows? So it's a tough spot here for Nicole moving forward if Christmas stays in the game. But here she is, middle upper tier, and I think that's relatively fair for now for Nicole. I mean, Nicole now has the most, by far, the most days in the house. She is the, you know, I don't know what you would, not the face of Big Brother, but like, she is the person who has spent the most time playing this game. And legacy wise, that has to mean something.
Yeah, it's weird to me that is a true statement. And that is, I wish I liked Nicole more. I wish I would love to say that Nicole like was the face of Big Brother, because again, like, yeah, she has been in the house for so long. But Nicole is a confusing, I guess, character/player for me, because I feel like the reason why Nicole is still in the house right now is because everyone kind of just underestimates her Big Brother 18 game. No one really credits that much. And so they kind of feel like they don't really even factor that into the Nicole that they know. And I also kind of feel like, because of that, like, she is a winner who is at this point kind of just like a puppet for Cody's game. She wasn't always Cody's puppet, but Cody totally just took out all of her puppets. So now she has no choice but to just run to Cody. So now she kind of is just in this weird, I would say, not goat spot, because she could still win, but I don't know. She's not the power player that I think people were saying she was earlier on, when they were saying, you know, Nicole could win it all for sure. You know, I don't know.
Nicole is a leech, and also like the angel of death to everyone she works with. Like, she leeches onto you, squeezes every single thing she can out of you, and then throws you away, and then moves on to the next person. But also, like, she did it to Ian, she did it to Danny, but like, she always had Cody as her number one. And this whole time she's been clinging onto him and riding him all the way through. And the problem that she's going to run into, I think, in this endgame is that Enzo is trying to do the same thing. He's also like trying to ride on Cody's back. But Enzo's relationship with Cody is more symbiotic than Nicole's. So I think that that'll be a fun like thing to watch them sort of fight over Cody's loyalty as we get really, really close to the end here. But also, I think that Nicole's strategy is completely infuriating to watch as an audience member, but it's effective. And, you got to give it to her that she has played three times. She's won and she's in the top six. And yeah, I mean, I don't like it that she's still there. I don't like it that she's in the upper tier, but it is what it is. And the chips fell the way that they did this season. And a lot of it has to do with Nicole's annoying strategy.
I mean, I think she's still in serious contention to be the first two-time winner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like regardless of that, if Nicole wins the game, she has the most days in the game, she will never, just the fans will not allow her to be the face of Big Brother. They won't allow. And it's like literally, it's the reason why we don't like her. Like, I'm trying to find a way to put it, but it's literally because of her. We refuse her. And for that, she will never become a big member of the Big Brother pantheon like a Janelle, even though I would say she's a better player. For sure, she's a better player than Janelle, but she is
take
just
that back.
She's a better, Nicole Franzel is a better player than Janelle, unfortunately, I guess for me. But we refuse it because of just how Nicole plays the game. And I feel like that's fascinating, but also it means that she's not going. I feel like this is an adequate spot for her. We'll see. She can make it higher, but yeah.
If Nicole wins this game, mark it, 5 years from now, people say she's the best player of all time. People are arguing that. People are saying she's so underrated. She's so good. I can't believe people didn't appreciate Nicole.
She's I don't a
two-time
know.
Winner.
I feel like
I'll say, I'll say I was there. You don't know the pain if you weren't there of watching it happen.
And this is the thing, because I go through this all the time where people start watching the show fresh all the time. Having never watched the feeds, they go back, they watch previous seasons, they get an idea from the edit that they watched, or they look at the stats. Stats and edit are the two most lasting, impactful things that on the show's fan base. That is what I have noticed throughout my time in the fan base, is that the feed opinions exist at the time. And then they eventually fade as people go back and they watch seasons, they rewatch seasons and their memories change. That's what happens. And certainly from watching Survivor, at the time when Sandra won Heroes versus Villains, I didn't see a single person talk about Sandra being the best, Sandra being the queen, Sandra being the best. Everyone was talking about Parvati was robbed. Some people were talking about Russell was robbed. Some people were talking about Boston Rob was robbed. But nobody was talking about Sandra as the best player ever. At least not that I saw at the time. It was not the prevailing opinion at the time. It's something that grew over the years. That when you look back and you look at the stats, it's something that eventually pervades your mind. I really do feel like if Nicole wins this season, over the years, the opinion will just continue to rise because nobody else has that stat.
But Taryn, I think the thing is, even at this point, we all love Nicole and Big Brother 16 and Big Brother 18, the edit, like you were saying, the edit, they were trying to get us to like her and we kind of resisted it at that point. But at this point, even the show has turned on her. If you look at Oteb, Oteb said, "I don't like hearing your voice. It's annoying to me." So just for that, I feel like, if the show is against her and we're all against her, I don't see that changing. I understand your point, but also, the show still, like, for Survivor Heroes versus Villains, we all still, Sandra was an entertaining character to us. Of course, people were rooting for Russell to win. People were rooting for Parvati to win. But, Sandra was still, we all loved Sandra. We all loved watching her, and no one loved
Sandra's at least savage. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I do agree with you, Taryn. That's why I'm just saying take it back, because I don't want to have to deal with it. And you're right about most things. So I would like you to please take it back.
It's just like, I'm just saying, it's one of these moments. Somebody's going to send me this clip 5 years from now. I just want to say it for that person 5 years from now. Hello. feel free to send me this in my mentions.
There'll be a $100 bet. Someone in the chat, make a $100 bet with Taryn right now.
All right. Above Nicole in the Legacy Watch, Enzo, who has fallen out of the top tier into the upper tier below Cody.
This isn't surprising. As a self-proclaimed Stanzo, I had a very hard time with him triple eviction night when he didn't vote out Nicole. It was very tough for me to be holding my Stanzo card and not want to throw it in the trash. I'm choosing to stay. My flag is still firmly planted in the Stanzo camp, but I don't disagree with everybody bumming him down. He deserves it. He should pay for what he did.
I think it's totally, I think this is just totally reactionary to me, because I don't know, like, yeah, like I totally, I was pissed in the moment too, but also we people have already been discussing that. I feel like this is the right move. That was the right move for Enzo. And also I could see, like we were saying before with Christmas, I think that if you put Enzo in a season, if you put him in 100 seasons, I'd say 93 of those seasons, Enzo's making it to the top six.
Period. Well, you know, Phil, I was thinking about it today. I was like, what does Enzo do strategically that gets him into the spot? He's in the same spot he was in 12, essentially. And I was so down on Enzo preseason because I didn't think, I didn't see what the strategy was in 12. But he does what Nicole does, but in a totally different way. So he is so good socially that he has his pick of the litter, right? Beginning of the season, everybody pretty much wanted to work with him. And he was able to grab onto the person. 12, he did Hayden. This season, he picked Cody. Grab onto the person who I think that he perceives as this, like, strong socially, not as strong as him, but strong socially, and the person who he thinks is going to be able to win comps. And he like essentially climbs on their back and rides them as far as he possibly can. And he's not a leech like Nicole is. Nicole is like sucking the life out of you as she
Nicole
does it.
Adds
like
nothing.
Like Enzo is fun. Like Enzo is like cheering you on and he's like, let's do this.
Nicole keeps people in, or sorry, Enzo keeps people in line. Like Enzo, brings you valuable information. He hypes up the group. He keeps people loyal. He pulls in people like Tyler to make sure that they don't turn. Nicole, very rarely adds value to the group. She did keep, you know, Ian around. She had Christmas for a little while, but that was after Tyler had already gotten Christmas. So like Ian was really the only ad she had for the alliance. And like for the most part, she doesn't tend to add value. I think that's the main difference.
I think Enzo keeps people loyal, but also I think in a fun way. I think he reminds me of like a middle school basketball coach. You know what I mean? Where like you just are so engaged with him. And of course he is kind of like making you, you know, fall, not making you fall in his line, but you know, like, making like kind of making you think a certain way, but it, you know, in a fun, easygoing way. I will say though that I fantasize about like, what if we got to see like a younger Enzo? If we saw like a 25-year-old Enzo who doesn't kind of just get tired after a certain point, because I feel like that's what Enzo does. Like you were saying, like he latches onto some person, he rides them until the end. But you know, it's because like he kind of, I feel like he's tired of it. He's done with it, yo. You know, so he hasn't even been on the show in a little bit. So I wish, I don't know, in a different world, if Enzo was a little bit younger and he was a little bit more hungrier, I feel like we would see a great one. But I feel like this is a good spot for just the Enzo that we have now.
Yeah, I think the main problem here is that people like people that actually make moves. And Enzo doesn't make moves. Mm-hmm. That's not Enzo's game. Enzo exists.
Mm-hmm.
He exists in a group. He helps keep the status quo. I mean, Enzo is Tommy from last season, mm-hmm. just with a different message. With Tommy, was just like, keep the group together. Enzo's actions are doing that, but his words are like, let's make a big move, yo, as I'm keeping the group together. Let's make a big move, yo, as I betray everything that I'm telling you. And that's, I think, where a lot of like the betrayal is feeling with this sudden drop, where like people are realizing that like, oh, Enzo lied to us. Like, well, we just got Enzo'd. We just experienced what just happened. What happened to Davon and Bailey and Janelle and Kaser and Tyler. Like, we got pulled. We thought Enzo was on our side secretly, even though we knew he was with Cody the whole time. We were like, yeah, but he's really with us. He really wants a move to be made. And then he voted that way, and we were like, oh my God, we got played.
Mm-hmm. And he's on the back of the person who's playing the best in the season, basically. And he's not even really helping steer the ship. And he's afraid. He lets the person do, you know, what they want to do. But Enzo does play a little scared. And as a Stanzo, I feel like it's within my right to admit that he plays scared, and sometimes that's really, really, really frustrating, like it was on the triple eviction. And he likes people to do the dirty moves for him so that he doesn't have to. And yeah, I think Enzo has brought so much to the season, which is hilarious because preseason, I was like, why is he here? And he, I feel like, is one of the only fun characters we've had all season. And I do think that by the end of the season, he'll probably have moved back up a little bit, because making it like such a deep run of it, both of his times that he was on in such a similar way, is like that really says something about his ability.
For me, I think it makes perfect sense why Enzo is the type of person to, you know, hype it up. Yo, let's make a move. Yo, let's make, you know, let's do something, because like people have been saying, you know, he wants, you know, them to make the move, not him. But the confusing part about it to me is that, why is he saying it in the DR? I feel like that's why he got bumped down, because he was in the DR like, yo, it's time to make a move. I'm not doing this no more. I'm sick of this, yo. But like, and then if you go back on that, can you go in the DR and say, I vote to evict David? How does that, that is why he dropped. I think that is why he dropped. Not because he's hyping other people up, but because he's hyping us up.
Do you, my honest opinion, my honest theory on Enzo is that he believes it when he says he wants to make a move. Like, the Enzo really is just like pointing his weapon in all directions at all times, like ready to go at any point. But he waits on directions from Cody. Like, it's that I personally think that's it. Like, when he made a move against Matt, it's because Hayden did it, right? Like, Hayden pointed him in that direction and said, let's go. And I think all season long, he's been waiting for the okay. And that's like week one, he was like, we could backdoor Tyler. Yeah. Cody's like, no. When Tyler was on the block next to Ian, he was like, we could get rid of Tyler. Yeah. And Cody's like, no. I want to get rid of Nicole. Yo. And Cody's like, no. And now he's like, all right, let's get rid of Christmas. Yo, we're making the moves. And now Cody's going to be like, actually, we're going to go with Tyler. All right, yo, that's it. We're going to go with Tyler. We're making the big moves. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's Enzo. I feel like he's ready to go, but he doesn't actively play the game. He waits mm-hmm. for the person who's running the game to make the active moves. So he's ready to do anything. He'll literally mm-hmm. turn on his best friend, as long as it's not Cody. He'll turn on anybody at Cody's word. And that's why he's willing to make so many big moves, but doesn't actually do them.
Yeah. I essentially agree. I also kind of feel like he does that even to hype himself up, to kind of give him some sense of purpose or meaning in the game and meaning in the house. So he's not just kind of, he doesn't emotionally feel like he's just sitting there, you know,
like Enzo as Dan's number two. would be slitting throats left and right. Like, he'd be bathing in blood at this point in the season. That's where he would be. All right. Above Enzo is Cody in the top tier. He has landed. It's taken a while for Cody, but he has finally made it into the top tier. Now, it is just by a hair, but he is there. And if the game continues to play out the way it seems to be playing out, I think he will at least finish here. There's definitely a conversation to be had at where he will end up overall. But here he is in the top tier. He has run this season from the start to the final six to this point. He is now, as I said, closing in on some comp records. He is going to tie for the, best average placements if he makes it to the final two and wins the game. He's basically at the top of a lot of records, a lot of lists, a lot of accomplishments. And both seasons he played, he pretty much, helped run the game and or ran the game. There are a lot of things I'm sure that people can and will say against him to like discredit what has happened and all of the things that I just said. But as I mentioned before with Nicole, at the end of the day, when you have these things, it's hard to really make a huge case against them, especially legacy wise. Look, he's the guy. He ran an all-star season.
Cody is really good. He's really good and he deserves the top tier placement, and he's so boring on my TV. I just wish he was like more exciting. Give me something, Cody. Give me anything. It's just, it's like he deserves the top tier placement, but I'm going to say it begrudgingly. I want him to make me laugh or yell or be angry or something. And I just feel nothing towards Cody. It's complete apathy, which is ridiculous because he's been running an all-star season and I'm still so apathetic towards him. It's kind of a skill within itself.
Yeah, it is really, it sucks that this season, Cody and Nicole, have kind of just been like the spearheads of the game, especially Cody, but the fan base just can't really get behind them because they're not as great of TV. But I think that people on the internet love to criticize the fact that Cody got a good draw. People love to say that, Cody, he got the best cast list, Paul's not there, Dan's not there, whatever. You can say whoever, he got the great cast. He got Nicole. You can have a great cast set up for you and you can still totally tank your game. And it's still hard to play Big Brother as successfully as Cody did. Sure, it's a little easier. Sure, you can still criticize, Derek for having an easy cast. You can criticize anyone for having an easy cast. You know what? Cody still did it. And if Cody pulls this off, this is going to be, I think, maybe even a top five Big Brother win. Criticize me if you want, chat. It's true. I feel like what else do you want him to do? He from week one, everything that he wanted besides Janelle going home week one exactly happened. And maybe I'm calling it too early. Maybe he'll go out in week and final four and that's it. But if Cody pulls this off, he has to be top tier. He has to even be above Kacer. But Cody's boring. I don't know.
No, you're right. You're right, Phil. That's the thing. You're completely correct. And I'm just going to sit here and nod because, I wish he was something. I wish I could describe Cody with a few adjectives. I can't even think of words to describe him. How would you, what would you say if someone didn't know Cody, other than Jersey, handsome, what do you say about him? I just wish that someone who's playing such a good game, I could get excited about him. I don't know.
he's totally casted in that just like hunky guy archetype. I think that's what, that's why they wanted him. And, you know, he ended up playing with Derek, who's a great player. And, but also just people like Cody. Cody's a likable guy, you know? And I just think that, like, even on the feeds, like, I don't know. I think I could get used to just like talking to, I feel like Cody could talk to practically anyone and, you know, they'd come away saying, you know, he looks like a D-bag, but he's actually not so bad. He's okay. You know, which works for him. That works for him. Exactly. Nice. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, if it works for you, it works for you, you know, got to find your angle.
Yeah. All right. Above Cody is Tyler. But not by that much. Not by that much. Just a few points away now. Tyler, no movement from last week. He survived the triple eviction, but I'm not sure he's going to survive this week. So next week might be the final indicator for Tyler as to where he ends up. Maintaining the top tier, but he is toward the bottom end of it at this point. I'm starting to feel like, you know, we started the season. Can Tyler end up in the Pantheon? It would be pretty easy for him to, if he makes it far enough. He could easily land in the Pantheon. Now I feel like my question is, will he maintain top tier?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is just the big question. And I feel like he will, because, you know, he has come into the game with such a big target, and the fact that he's in the final six is still, it's extremely impressive. I did not see that coming. I thought Tyler was gonna, you know, unfortunately flame out this season, but he has, a lot of it has not been attributed to him, but it's still impressive that he's even there. You know what I mean? It sucks about what happened in week five, you know, and that, I think that totally tarnished his reputation for good, but it's still impressive that he's there for me.
Yeah, I mean, if I was an all-star on this season and I walked in and I saw Tyler, I would have wanted him out week one. It would have been no ifs, ands, or buts. And I'm a huge fan of him. And that's why I would have been like, absolutely not. He has to go now, because what he can do is insane. And if he hadn't literally thrown away his game, he would be in such a great position right now. And I think that that's obviously what a lot of people struggle with when they rate him, as do I when I rate him. But Tyler's skill level is like definitely top tier level. And, I also think that I'm interested to see, once we get a bit away from this year, how people will feel about him, because I think a lot of it also has to do with the way he reacts to all of this on social media. I could easily see him getting on social media and not wanting to talk about Big Brother at all. I think this experience being back for him has been pretty negative. And the first time he had a net positive experience, and he doesn't really like talking about Big Brother that much. So I could really see him just wanting to disappear from the community completely, which I definitely think will hurt his legacy, because as a fan of his, when he didn't want to do a bunch of interviews postseason on 20, like that really like hurt his legacy for me. Like there was a lot of things that he did postseason on 20 that made me, you know, not like, like sort of rethink the way that I saw Tyler on the show. And I think that depending on what he does, and he's absolutely entitled to do whatever he wants once he leaves the show, he owes us nothing. But if we're strictly talking legacy wise, I think that that could really factor into the way people view him.
All you had to do was be nice. That's all you had to do.
I will give a counterpoint. I think that basically, like the three, Dr. Will, Dan, and Derek. Derek is the most involved in the community, gets the most amount of hate. Dan is the middle involved player, gets a middle amount of hate. Dr. Will acts like he's above Big Brother. It's beneath him. Gets the least amount of hate. That's all I'm going to say. I feel like there might be a winning strategy here.
Very true. I hadn't thought about that. You know, I hadn't thought about it. I just think that, like, if he, like, Dr. Will at least acknowledges like Big Brother's existence, you know.
True.
But yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see. And like I said, he owes people nothing. Once he's off the show, he came, he did his job, and he's left. But I think that that does factor a bit into the way people see him, you know, the years to come. So
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I the only way I see Tyler even rising from here, because I agree with you, Maggie, that like after the season, I feel like he's going to be, he's already done with it, but I feel like he's going to be totally done with it. He's going to want to just chill with Angela, make jewelry, do whatever they want, be influencers, do you think.
Live his life, yeah.
Exactly. They don't, but I will say, if Tyler starts to show fight, if in the edit we start to see Tyler really being like, yo, I need to pull out these comps, and he starts doing it, that's going to make him rise. And I feel like mm-hmm. then he's going to be in the pantheon with the Dans, with the Dare. You know, I mean, like he's people called him one of the greatest players of all time, and he didn't even win his first season. So if he's able to start just killing it and start showing that drive that we all want from him again, that's all we need. We want to like him. We just need a reason to like him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, above Tyler is still Kacer. And then Janelle, who neither of which saw any real movement here. Kacer at the top tier, and Janelle in the pantheon. I don't know if there's anything else to say about Janelle and Kacer, but go at it if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, Janelle's being on Twitter, I guess, is good for her. You know, like if it works for you, it works for you. But I would be interested to see, because I know Janelle said she wants to come back. I don't know if they would ever invite her back, but I guess, yeah, this is a good job, guys. Good spot for both of you. I don't know.
Janelle is so awesome. I wasn't around, like I didn't watch Big Brother when she was really on. I watched her on 14 Live, but you know, she was out so early. I didn't really like understand the epicness that is Janelle. And I think that maybe the reason that fans like love her and her resurgence has come up so much is because she's the exact same Janelle from 6 and 7. And there's a whole new crop of fans who, like me, who are got to watch it live and feel like they're watching along with her. And her triple eviction tweets were super fun for those of us who are, you know, sad she's there and rooting against the same people she's rooting against. And yeah, I think that Janelle absolutely has earned her spot in the pantheon. Like, she is Big Brother. Like, Janelle is Big Brother, and it's so great. It's great.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I will just say, with talking about Kacer, personally, I think he is too high, just because, I mean, everyone's been parroting it. He's a, you know, 3-time pre-juror, you know. But also I understand how much of an influence he is, and I understand how much there's no one else like him on Big Brother. So I'm not going to really dispute it. He could be lower for me, but you know.
All right. Well, there we have it. That is the legacy watch for the week. It seems like people continuing to be pushed up in the legs, starting to scrunch upwards, where before it was very symmetrical. A lot of people coming up. I wonder how that will continue as the season moves on. But that's what we have. And nothing seems to have changed so far. It seems like Tyler is still the pick at this point, that Tyler might actually go home on Thursday. I do expect that there's still, just like there were obstacles in the way of Christmas leaving by the end of the week, I do think there are still some obstacles in the way of Tyler leaving at the end of the week. So I do not expect this to be fully locked, but it's definitely not looking good for Tyler. Any final thoughts, Phil?
My final thoughts are, I'm actually excited to watch the episode on Monday. This is the first time I've been excited to actually watch an episode besides the triple eviction since I think the premiere. So, you know, this is great. I mean, we're getting some good strategy again. This is awesome. I'm excited to be here. This is awesome. Good, good. Yay.
All right, Maggie, any final thoughts?
No, it was just super fun to get to talk to everyone and, you know, give all my thoughts, all in good fun. Obviously, these people put themselves on national television for our entertainment. So, you know, but it's been so great to be here and talk with everybody.
All right. Well, thank you two for coming on with me. Thank you to the audience for hanging out and watching or listening to the podcast tonight. I will, of course, be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern to update you on everything that happens today on the Big Brother 22 live feeds. And not tomorrow night, Monday night, we will be live to recap the Monday night HOH and nomination episode of Big Brother 22, where we will probably find out more about what happened in the triple eviction and get Enzo's excuse as to why he didn't make the big move, yo. And then, of course, Tuesday night, we will have the Stockwatch roundtable. We'll rate the players and have fun with that and go over the three evicted players and see where they might cast their jury votes, as there's only six people left in the game at this point. So that's what we have for you. You can find me on Twitter at ArmstrongTaren. If you want to fill out one of these surveys, you can always find them there. You can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. Phil, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/@ listen up Philip. And you can also follow me on Letterboxd, where I'm always writing reviews for movies at letterboxd.com/PNTJR.
What's the best movie you've seen recently?
I just rewatched Back to the Future, actually. I haven't seen that movie since I was a kid, and it's unbelievably good. The structure, I don't want to get into it, but I don't know, it's everyone knows it's a great movie, but yeah, I don't know,
it's a good movie.
Incredible. Yeah,
I loved that movie. Loved it. Michael J. Fox was like the first crush I had.
Yeah, still looking good.
All right, Maggie, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at @_MLMorgan and on Instagram at @MLMorgan_.
All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight, and we'll see you next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.